Hello and welcome to The Convex Conversation with me, journalist Helen Fospero. By day, this week's guest is the Deputy CEO of the Diana Award, the only charity set up in the Princess of Wales memory, focused on her belief that young people have the ability to change the world, their country and their community. Alex Holmes is also the founder of Anti-Bullying Ambassadors. It's a subject close to Alex's heart, as he has first-hand experience of being racially bullied as a young boy. Thanks to his dedication, there are now more than 35,000 ambassadors in more than 4,000 schools across the UK and in other countries, and his work has been recognised by the Queen. Alex is also on the Gates Foundation board and is one of only a handful of people around the world and the first in the UK to receive a Muhammad Ali Humanitarian Award. And I'm delighted to say that he joins me now. Alex, that really is quite an introduction, especially given the fact you're only 33.
Thank you. Well, I think it's come from a lot of passion and brought me, I suppose, a purpose, which kind of originated from some of that pain of being bullied. But yeah, I'm really proud of everything that's been achieved so far.
Well, our paths crossed thanks to Jay and his virtual pub quiz. How did you get involved with that?
Yeah, so in the start of the pandemic, I was actually with my grandma, who is in her 90s, and we didn't have an awful lot to do because it was the start of the lockdown. And we both came across this quiz that had sort of been viral, and some of my friends had been playing it. And I thought this guy was really interesting, Jay. He seemed like he was managing a pretty big task on his own. At this point, there was sort of 200,000 households joining in. But I noticed he didn't have a hashtag. And that was my first sort of direct message to him about he might want to think about that, because a lot of people were guessing what to call it. And that was the start of a really sort of great friendship and now a partnership. And we've worked together on the quiz with lots of brands, lots of celebrities ever since, and it's still going strong, and it's great. From that, I've kind of made a friend in Jay, and I'm really, really proud to have been a part of it.
Have you been surprised the way it's taken off? It's a record, world record breaking quiz now, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it got the Guinness World Record, the most viewers of a quiz, and it always surprises me. And some of those surprising moments were sort of Jay being on the national ITV news, you know, as a main sort of headline story, and then setting up some of the surprises where perhaps some of the England players wanted to surprise him. Getting Gary Barlow to perform as the halftime entertainment, that was a real, one of the biggest concerts he's done in a while.
Hey everybody, there's a young lad waiting backstage ready to come on. Are you ready for him? Here he is.
Well, good evening everybody. I am your halftime entertainment. I hope you're doing well. How's it going out there? Are you ready to have a little sing-song? Okay, here we go. Everybody, arms in the air with a one. Two, one, two, three, four. Today this could be the greatest day of our lives. Before it all ends, before we...
Yeah, no, I think it's really surprising, but I think Jay's such a sort of authentic, he feels like he's sort of just a friend in your living room, really. So I think that's why it's been so popular.
He was really grateful. He really credits you as somebody who just stepped up to the mark, really, and gave him some much needed help, because he went from somebody nobody had heard of to suddenly being a bit of a national treasure, didn't he?
Yeah, it's very true. I think national treasure is a good way of describing it. And during something like a pandemic, there was little at times to be excited about. I think there was a lot of fear, and this was something regular every Thursday and Saturday evening, every Thursday after the NHS clap, that people could really look forward to, and they could come together with whoever it was in their household and their family and friends. And so I think it brought a lot of light and joy, you know, for people in a quite difficult time.
Alex, your work fighting against bullying comes from a very personal place. What happened to you?
Growing up, probably mostly in primary school, but also some in secondary school, I was on the receiving end of some bullying. The majority of it was because of where I'm from and where my dad's from. So I'm dual heritage. My dad's black. His side of the family is from Jamaica. And then my mum's side, she's white. She's from Spain. And some of the students in my class at that age, sort of 8, 9, 10, didn't really understand that difference, because my school wasn't terribly diverse at all. I think I was one of three students who were mixed race. I would be on the receiving end of some racist abuse, and it would be things about my dad and his skin colour. And I can remember it resulted in me at times going home quite upset and fearful. And I think the school didn't really deal with it very well because they didn't have much experience of the issue or how to tackle it. And then during secondary school, some of that continued, but a lot of it was around perceived difference and, you know, around my perceived sexuality because I was very into performing arts. And I would get quite a lot of comments about perhaps being gay and associating that word gay as a negative adjective. And, you know, that definitely affected me because it wasn't actually till I was much older that I did come to terms with my sexuality and I'm gay. But at the time in school, a lot of my peers used that word against me and it definitely made me feel uncomfortable and unsafe and upset. So, yeah, that experience, I think, made me think about what I could do when it came to the sixth form. And that's when I decided to change things.
And what did you decide to do when you got to the sixth form?
The biggest thing was that my teachers maybe would talk about bullying once in an assembly, but my peers didn't really pay much attention to it. You know, they didn't feel they could stand up for me or stand up for others that were going through bullying. So I came up with this idea of students being empowered and I called them anti-bullying ambassadors. And if you're an anti-bullying ambassador, then it's your job to not only learn how to protect yourselves from harmful behavior, but also protect others. And that was really popular and it was very much giving students ownership of the issue because as young people, we spend 11,000 hours of our life at school, huge amount of time. And we're probably the biggest asset that schools have, young people, to shape attitudes and change behaviors. So this was very much about giving young people the control to help others think about how they should be treated and more importantly, challenge some of those harmful behaviours.
It's extraordinary because you look at the figures that we just said in the introduction, there are now 35,000 anti-bullying ambassadors in more than 4,000 schools just across the UK. And I know that you've got ambassadors in Miami, in Greece, in Europe, in Dubai. How have you managed to grow it so effectively and what difference has it made?
Yeah, I think the really interesting thing about bullying is when you talk to people, so many people have been affected by it. And when we've done polls and research with, you know, likes of sort of YouGov or Survation and asked the great British public, have you experienced bullying? Over half of adults say they were bullied at school. And that's still sadly the same for children and young people. We asked, we just did some more research there recently for a campaign called Don't Face It Alone. And again, half of young people say they experience it. So I think it is something that so many of us go through and have witnessed as a result that it feels something important to take notice of. And I think increasingly as a society, we know that bullying can really contribute to poor mental health. And studies have shown if you've been exposed to bullying or gone through it as a child, you're more likely to have poorer mental health, poorer job prospects, and lack the ability to trust other adults in the workplace when you get older. So it stays with you. And I think my experience has helped and that passion has helped sort of pitch it as an issue that is important. It's certainly got the likes of Facebook and Instagram as social media companies or Nationwide Building Society, who are all about respect and building society, kind of resonated with them. And they're now some of our biggest partners and have helped us, along with the government, Department for Education, grow the program and increase the reach. But there's still a lot of schools actually to go. But I do believe that this is an effective way of changing the culture. And it all starts with young people. And it's about being more than just a piece of paper. Any workplace or any school can have a policy, but this is actually about putting the power and the idea generation in the hands of young people and letting them come up with some of the solutions. And when you do that, we see a real difference.
And do you help mentor them, Alex, and show them how to deal with these things?
Yeah, so we provide all of the young people who have become ambassadors a full day of training and they learn about the signs and what bullying looks like, what it sounds like. And then they start to think about what support looks like. You know, how do you challenge bullying or how do you support the person going through it before coming up with their own solutions of what might work in their school or what are some of the priorities. Every school's different. For some schools, racism might be an issue or online bullying or LGBTQ bullying. It varies. But yeah, we provide a lot of support and sort of ongoing mentoring and aftercare so that young people can feel confident to continue to address this, because the most effective anti-bullying campaigns are not the ones that just do things in anti-bullying week every November. It's the ones that all year round constantly remind students and staff how we treat each other. So we think it's really important to provide that ongoing support and lots of ideas and bring together a community. I mean, that's the exciting thing for the young people being trained, that they find out that they're part of a community and that other schools, other young people are also facing the same problem as them.
I guess when you were growing up, there were times when perhaps you felt very lonely because there wasn't this kind of help out there available when you were going through it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the world was a very different place when I was going through my own experience of bullying. I think it was seen maybe to be character building, bullying, or, you know, certainly a normal part of growing up and childhood. I was quite often sort of told to stop crying by some teachers and to just ignore it. And I think that was quite hard to deal with. And certainly student-led campaigns were not the thing. It was often only once a year my teachers might come into an assembly and present about bullying. Whereas now, in our 4,000 plus schools, students are presenting the assemblies. They're coming up with ideas like patrols in the playground or smile and compliment days. You know, they're making a real difference. It's their ideas. But for me, I didn't have that at school. And it did feel at times, you know, really lonely. And I think I felt depressed as a child quite often.
It sounds trivial to say, but I do understand a little bit. As growing up as a redhead, see coloured hair, I didn't want to be picked out for the colour of your hair. And then as you get older and you become a woman, people love the colour of your hair. But though, as I say, it sounds a bit trivial next to the stuff you went through, it wasn't very nice. And there were plenty of tears over that kind of thing, my end. Of course, though, in our school days, Alex, I suppose bullying could often be left at the school gates. But social media's changed everything, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think whereas you could leave bullying at the school gates, it can now follow you home into the palm of your hand, into your bedroom. It can feel like it's hard to escape from. And I think that's why we're increasingly doing more around that. What I would say, though, is there is a perception that the internet perhaps is a scarier place than our schools. But the research shows that the majority of young people face bullying in their school, so about half. And it's a much smaller percentage, maybe like 20 to 30% who are bullied online. But in almost all cases, the bullying starts offline for children, face to face in their school by a familiar friend or classmate, and then continues online. Very rarely is a child bullied in isolation just online. It usually starts offline as perhaps drama in the playground and then becomes digital drama. So I think it's important that we remember that. Without a doubt, social media and technology has helped people who are displaying that bullying behavior reach the person that they're bullying. But for children, the majority of the horrible experiences that they face are still in school, which is why we concentrate so heavily on school, because online bullying is still a much smaller percentage.
You've been part of the Royal Foundation Task Force on the Prevention of Cyberbullying with the Duke of Cambridge, Prince William. How does that work?
Yeah, so the Duke of Cambridge has really sort of been passionate about this issue. I think he's seen for himself the power of the internet, but also where it hasn't always been as positive. And then he's met a lot of our young people, ambassadors who have been affected by the online world and bullied through the internet. So a couple of years ago, he decided to call all of the social media companies together and convene them. It's quite a special thing, really, as the Duke. He was able to convene them to a meeting at Buckingham Palace, and all of these tech giants came along, these CEOs and these execs, and he's really pushing them still to this day to do more around this issue. And there was some real progress that came out of that, from things like the way that they look at how easy it is to report and some of the support that they give, particularly children, when they do report. But there's still a long way to go. And things like the government's online harms safety bill that's going through Parliament, should be with us by the end of the year, might go some way to regulating. But the biggest thing I think the task force achieved was the education element. And at the end of the day, this is still human beings choosing to behave and treat each other a certain way. So it's important that we try and educate, because the platforms are maybe the means that by how people reach each other, but ultimately it's still humans deciding to choose to display that behavior. So education was an important part of it, and the task force definitely worked on that and also pushed the companies to think about doing more and innovating the way they deal with safety.
And as a father of three young children himself, I don't suppose there's really any better than the Duke of Cambridge to champion that for you.
No, that's right. Yeah. And I think, you know, he always says it's not just because he's a father, but I think that definitely plays into it. And I think you can't help as a father think about the world that your children will live in. for both Kate and William. That's helped them think about a lot of choices for their focus for the Royal Foundation, from everything around mental health and early years, childhood, to conservation, thinking about the world that you'll leave behind, and thinking about also the role that you can play as the future King Queen definitely plays into that.
Are there any examples or stories you can share with us that really highlight what you've achieved?
Yeah, I think there are lots of stories. One of them that sort of stands out is a boy called Jack, who emailed to myself at the Diana Award to say that he was being bullied at his school and he didn't really know what to do about it. I emailed back some training that was, you know, actually taking place near his school and that lots of schools could come to. I didn't really hear anything back from Jack, and I kind of just hoped that things had got better for him. And I went to do the training at the school, you know, weren't they? Well, we trained about 150 young people from the local area. And I got back to the office and there was an email that actually Jack had been at the training. He didn't introduce himself because he was quite shy. He was so excited. His teacher had already agreed to listen the next day to his ideas. And Jack became really, a really strong ambassador, made a real difference in school, changed the situation for himself, and then went on to become BBC Radio 1 teen hero for his anti-bullying work. So I think there's lots of examples like that of young people, I suppose in a similar way to me, going through that sort of pain of being bullied, but then making a real difference in their school and community. And I hope that Jack and many others will become those sort of leaders, those compassionate leaders that we want to see in, you know, the world of business, sports, media. I think it starts with that sort of experience in school. So yeah, lots of stories like that I think that I'm really proud of.
The Princess of Wales has been in the news a lot recently. It would have been her 60th birthday this year. You're Deputy CEO of the Diana Award. Tell me about the charity and what it does.
Yeah, so it would have been Diana's 60th birthday, and it's amazing to think the legacy that she sadly left behind. We are the only charity in sort of Diana's name and in memory of her, and we are rooted in this belief that young people have the power to change the world. So all of our programmes and initiatives are very much about that. But the Diana Award is what we were set up as 20 years ago to be part of her legacy and to recognise young people around the globe that are making a real difference. Many who are following in her footsteps, challenging some of the biggest issues that the world faces, or even issues that carry a lot of stigma. So we have award holders across the globe who are tackling perhaps the stigma of HIV and AIDS, or homelessness, or perhaps looking at things like sanitation in their local community and improving that. We have some real change makers, and every year around 1,000 young people are awarded the Diana Award, and then we give them a lot of support and encouragement to further their activism and their campaigning. And it's lovely to be part of something that remembers such a, you know, a woman that actually was all about service and kindness and compassion. And we're really pleased of that reach and to be a sort of living legacy to the late Diana.
Diana was never afraid to make a difference, was she? Whether that be talking about HIV or being out looking at landmines, she was right up there, willing to wear her heart on her sleeve with all these things. And she really believed in young people, didn't she?
That's right. She really didn't shy away from some of those big issues. And through her profile and her personality, she was able to bring a lot of attention to some really important issues that to this day are, as a result, much more reduced or, you know, less of a problem. That sort of spirit of young people was always alive in her. She sort of demonstrated that youthful optimism that a lot of young people have, that hope and that brave aspect. And we see that all the time with young people and issues around things like climate change or, you know, racism. Like, actually, we're seeing young people often be the ones that are leading and showing the way. And I think Diana really stood for that and often was the one that wasn't afraid to address some really difficult topics. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of synergy there between the power of young people and the power that Diana had as a person, as an individual.
It seems, just chatting to you, that the Diana Award role is a very natural and comfortable fit for you. Just wondering how you got involved in the first place.
Yeah, so I was a recipient myself of the Diana Award when I was 16 for my anti-bullying work. And I think the nice thing about a Diana Award is that once you sort of become an awardee, you don't easily sort of get away, and the charity want to support you. They want to recognize you, you know, they want to help nurture any skills or talents that you have. And that was definitely the case for me. and I stayed in touch. And then really the opportunity came where the Department for Children, Schools and Families heard about my work in schools across the country and invited me in. At the time, it was Ed Balls as Education Secretary. Probably a lot of people know him now for Strictly Come Dancing, but he did used to be a politician. And we did a presentation and I invited in the Diana Award at the same time. And then we had the opportunity to pitch for some funding. And now they've actually been the sort of longest running funder for a while and helped us spread that reach in England. But yeah, that's the sort of connection there. And I think it's a nice one. And I was able to bring the program to the charity and really develop it and go from being a trainer, sort of implementing the program, to working my way up to be deputy CEO, which is the position that I have now, where I'm more focusing on fundraising and partnerships and trying to amplify and scale what we're doing.
That's fantastic. And you're also on the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation Advisory Board. What role do you serve with them?
Yeah, so Bill and Melinda, as chairs of the Gates Foundation, put an awful lot of their wealth into issues around inequality and poverty and disease and illness. But also one of the programs that they're really passionate about is called Goalkeepers. And this is all around the world's commitment to the Sustainable Development Goals, which has a target of being achieved by 2030. Climate and environment, to education, quality education, to peace and justice. And the idea is actually it's really important that all of these goals are achieved in order to make the world a better place. And lots of governments have signed up to those. But Goalkeepers as a program is about individuals, goalkeepers who are appointed to help keep the goals and keep the pressure on governments, corporates and society really to make progress and accelerate progress around the global goals. It's a really interesting project. It's still quite new, but every year we appoint new people to be goalkeepers. Those are often people that have made a big contribution to the global goals themselves. And I'm on the advisory board sort of helping them think about the global goals and how we become more successful. And I think particularly what I'm bringing is a sort of youth lens and definitely a sort of technology and online perspective as well, because I think it's going to take a lot of spotlight and involvement from young people, that generation, and the mediums that they use in order to achieve the goals. But yeah, it's a really exciting project. And having spent time with both Melinda and Bill, you can really sort of see the passion that they have for this. And think things like the pandemic. Unfortunately, we put a report out and that pandemic across the globe in just 25 weeks at the time set us back in terms of progress by 25 years. So there's a lot of work to be done in order to achieve that 2030 target. So it's about everyone coming together, and Goalkeepers is one such initiative that is about driving that.
It's fantastic that you've met Melinda and Bill and that you've had that direct connection with them rather than it being a more distant thing, invited to be on the board but not actually speak to them. What are they like and how inspired did you feel in their company by the work that they're doing?
Both of them have incredible focus. You know, they're really focused in on the issues that they feel they can contribute to and help accelerate progress on. And that's, you know, been the way for a long, long time. Melinda is particularly interested around gender equality and women and the importance of that. Actually, you know, if you can invest in women across the globe and give them more ownership of their finances, control over the careers that they're able to choose, then actually that can unlock a lot of potential and can solve actually a lot of bigger issues. Particularly, I think having more women in leadership positions and government around the world would benefit us all. So I think Melinda's quite focused on that. And I think Bill is very good with the sort of stats, and he loves a good stat, and he is very good at helping to bring to life the issues through the use of stats and research. But both of them, I think, complement each other very well as chairs. And even though there has been the news now around the divorce, they're still 100% committed to the foundation and that work and giving away the majority of their wealth and investing it into the foundation, which is great, I think, and admirable.
The other thing that we said in the introduction is that you're one of a handful of people to receive the Muhammad Ali Humanitarian Award and indeed the first person ever to get it in the UK. That must have been really special. And was that in recognition of the work that you've done in the anti-bullying field?
Yeah, that's right. It was such a special occasion, and to receive that email out of the blue was really surprising. But thinking about Muhammad Ali's legacy, and he was obviously able to build his more so than Diana. But yeah, it was a great, great honor, really, to be part of that, and also to meet his wife, Lonnie Ali, who, you know, is still around and was a big part of that ceremony. But yeah, you know, huge honor. And it was for recognizing sort of work that I'd done around the anti-bullying initiative and spreading that, and a really great experience in Louisville, you know, where he was based, Kentucky, United States. To be at that ceremony and to be surrounded by his family and friends and to hear more about his journey and his legacy. So definitely an experience and a memory I'll never forget.
It seems our podcast is full of these memories you'll never forget, because you also met the Queen, didn't you?
Yes, true. I was very lucky to be the recipient of something called the Queen's Young Leader Award, which is was a scheme in the Commonwealth which identified leaders from across the Commonwealth who were demonstrating qualities and spirit of the Queen at a young age, who took up that leadership position. And I was one of the recipients for the UK. And that resulted in a ceremony at Buckingham Palace, where I received my Queen's Young Leader Award. And it was great to spend some time with her, you know, during that awarding, and talk to her a little bit about her grandson, Prince William, and what we've done together on cyberbullying, and also about the issue of bullying. And she was incredibly receptive, and also remarked herself that she felt, you know, bullying was a big problem. Another sort of great opportunity. And I think all of these opportunities sort of leave me with a lot of additional knowledge, but also a network. And I think I've learned a lot from the other leaders as well that have been recognized, who have some amazing skills and have also scaled things and tackled big problems. So yeah, really, really proud of that opportunity as well.
What I admire, Alex, is that I know from reading about you and a little bit from talking to you today, your childhood did have a lot of pain in it because of the bullies. And I think it's really wonderful to look at how you turned that around, and that you've gone on to help thousands of other people get out of this misery that you suffered.
I do think back to that, and you know, particularly that point I made around how much of your life, you know, 11,000 hours you spend at school, and for just one of those hours to be one where you're made to feel upset or unsafe or uncomfortable, well, it does stay with you. So I don't want any child to go through what I did. And I also think that it's right under our nose as an issue, but it's also preventable. And that's the hope that spurs me on to continue seeing schools develop their anti-bullying ambassador initiative, and schools being safer, calmer and more productive places. And I think bullying could be a real barrier to people fulfilling their potential, and those scars, whether physical or online, stay with you. So it's really important that we do more to tackle this, because I think it's absolutely preventable and it doesn't cost anything, really.
And a challenge of a very different nature. I presume you're helping with Jay's next world record breaking attempt at running and staying awake for the longest quiz ever.
Yeah, so Jay's never one to shy away from a challenge. And after already having a world record in his bag, he's now after another one, as well as doing a marathon, yeah, for the charity that helped him when he was homeless on the streets. So yeah, I'm going to be continuing to help with that. And I think it's exciting. It certainly keeps me busy. We actually did our first in-person quiz a month or two ago in his hometown of Darwen in Lancashire, and that was great to do. But yeah, he's always coming up with great ideas, and then it's my job to try and help support them, or help us sort of smash them in the best way possible.
Best of luck with that, and thank you for finding time for us today. It's been brilliant talking to you, Alex. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, and yeah, it's a great podcast series, and I'm going to enjoy listening to Jay's as well. So yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
You're absolutely welcome. You've been listening to Alex Holmes, Deputy CEO of the Diana Award, founder of Anti-Bullying Ambassadors, and recipient of a Muhammad Ali Humanitarian Award. Download and subscribe to our series at convex.podbean.com, or search The Convex Conversation on Spotify, Apple and Google Podcasts, or simply ask Alexa. There are more than 50 podcasts out there, so if you're still listening to me, Alex, there's plenty for you to choose from. I'll be back next week with another great guest. Join me then. Bye for now.